Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. And of course, I'm not Michael Cutler. This is Commander Tom Garcia filling in for Michael Cutler tonight. Now, I apologize. I got an email from him a couple days ago asking if I could do show, and I said, sure. I can't find that email. So I can't tell you what he's up to tonight. He's up to something. And it's got something to do with him being such a rock star of national security and immigration issues, et cetera. Who knows where he's at tonight? Last time I filled in, he was at a movie premiere and that he had been invited to. So I apologize. You'll have to, you know, check with him on his next show next Friday to find out what he was up to. But I could not for the life of me find that email. In any case, I am broadcasting live, yes, live, from the island of Curaçao. And if you're not familiar with the island of Curaçao, well, let me tell you where it's located. It's about 80 miles from Aruba, which is just north of the coast of Venezuela, and over closer toward the western side of Venezuela. So Colombia is not that far away either. And why am I here? Well, if you've listened to me in the past, fill in for Michael. I also do a radio show, The American Hour, on the network. So I am here on what we call a layover. Yes, I have a nice big suite right on the beach. I'm looking out at the beach right now. I sat out there early and had a Corona and smoked a cigar as I got ready for the show tonight. And it's a tough job. It's a tough job. Anyway, now it's key to the times, and sometimes layovers are so nice. I knew I would show for him. It just would be from this remote location, somewhat remote, out of the country. Now, I have to now say, because of that, I'm relying on the hotel's Wi-Fi system to do this broadcast, which has turned to be somewhat unreliable today. I called my wife earlier, and she said that everything sounded good. So, and by the way, I'm doing all of this off of an iPad. So I've got the studio on my iPad. I've called into the studio via Skype. And I've got some notes and things all on my iPad that I'm going to use for the show tonight. So bear with me. Hopefully, the sound quality is good. And for those of you that download after the fact, hey, if there are any disruptions, et cetera, I will certainly call right back in, but it seems to be working just fine now, and you can always fast forward a little. But that's the great thing about downloading, and that's we get radio gets the vast majority of its listeners from downloads because it's so convenient. And in any case, but we do get live listeners, plenty of them, and people calling in, so you never know what's going to happen. But if you're downloading it, thank you very much for downloading. Appreciate that. Now, let's get right into some stuff that Michael wants me to talk about tonight and that I want to talk about that has to do with Michael and some of his projects. First of all, you need to know that his websites, he's got a few of them here that you can connect with him. He's not on social media, you know, old school, but he does have a couple websites. MichaelCutler.net, MichaelCutler.net. And then, of course, he does his weekly TV show on TalkBoard.com. University senior fellow with the Californians. If you're not on Michael's email list, and the fact that you are listening to it or are downloading it, you probably are. But if you're not, go to MichaelCutler.net and sign up right there to get on his email list. And he sends out a couple blasts a week updating you on the latest information that's going on when it comes to immigration, immigration law, national security, border security. Great stuff. I thought I was well-versed in these areas, and I've learned a lot over the years from Michael. And, of course, you know that he was an INS agent for 30 years, and so that's why he's constantly going around the country doing interviews and testifying on Capitol Hill about various issues. Now, one of the emails that he recently sent out had to do with Chuck Schumer, as I like to refer to him as Chucky Schmucky Schumer. And he started off by saying that politicians who've been around a while learn how to use deceptive language to create false illusions, that concerns of their constituents are being met, even while nothing of substance is actually being done to address those concerns. And who are we going to zero in on? Of course, they kind of all do that, don't they? But Chuckie Schmucky Schumer, is certainly a politician who has had decades of on-the-job training in the art of using deceptive language and the use of fatally flawed strategies that fail to provide the security that they appear to provide. So let's get down to brass tacks. What should be remembered is that the only thing worse than no security is false security. He's absolutely right. Now, one of my areas of somewhat expertise, I guess you call it, is national and international security, because I was a military officer in the United States Navy for 20 years. I was a fighter pilot, and actually 22 years, 9 years on active duty and the rest as a reservist, lots of flying, flew lots of fighter jets, and got to spend some time overseas and some time in the Middle East. So what Michael is saying here is absolutely right. No security is not as bad as we just know we have no security. Then you're on your toes. False security makes you feel like it's okay when it's not. So here's the key to Chuckie Schmucky Schumer. Schumer's platform of propaganda built on false promises to address security and fairness is the basis for my most recently posted article that appears on the CAPS website. Remember, that's capsweb.org. Schumer chairs the Senate. The Senate's Immigration Subcommittee, and has long opposed meaningful immigration law enforcement. Believe me, if anybody would know, Michael would know, because he's been dealing with these folks for years and trying to get to listen. When he was a member of the House of Representatives, so before he was a senator, he was one of the key architects of the SAW, the Special Agricultural Worker Amnesty Program, that became incorporated into, yes, the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986 under Ronald Reagan, that is most remembered for providing nearly 4 million illegal aliens amnesty and lawful status. Most people learn from their mistakes, but not Mr. Schumer. Fraud permeated the entire amnesty system. The SAW program was rife with fraud, and in fact, it's worth remembering that one of the participants in terrorist plots within the United States was granted lawful status under this flawed program. So if you want to read more about that, go to the CAPS website, capsweb.org, to get the entire article that Michael wrote for the CAPS website that talks about this issue and why guys like Chuckie Schmucky Schumer cannot be trusted, why they're lying to us, and they're really just looking for more votes, you know. Give amnesty to as many people as you can and turn into the Democrats. I'm all for giving amnesty. If we're going to do that, let's give amnesty to millions of Eastern Europeans, because I guarantee you they won't vote Democrat. They'll vote Republican. They understand what communism is. And a lot of those folks have skills. They may be poor where they're at, but they will find jobs rapidly and quickly here in the U.S. Let's do that. Well, that wouldn't be right. We can't do that, because we can't, you know, have a whole bunch of new Republicans joining our country and people that actually have skills versus the unskilled and uneducated. All right, I'm getting off on a little tangent there, but let's talk about something that is really been bothering me from day one, and that was the whole Benghazi affair, and the media didn't cover that much. I want to tell you my perspective as a career military officer about what I knew from day one. In the military, we have a messaging system. We've had it long before, you know, we had the internet and that kind of thing, where we have a communication center on base or on the ship, whatever ship you might be on, that if there was something of a national incident of national priority, whatever you want to call it, that would occur, we had guidelines for how quickly we had to put a message out, right on down to little 5 minutes. If you were the duty officer, the squadron duty officer, and an airplane crashed, depending on the nature of the crash, you might have 5 minutes to get a message out. Now, that initial message would be extremely brief, as you could understand. You can't sit here and write a big, long paper on just what happened, because you don't even know what happened. But you had to get the word out right away. Airplane crashes into schoolyard, whatever, you know, and get it to the first thing you do is call the communication center, have somebody, you grab somebody, call the comm center and tell them, I got a flash priority message coming. And then we had sheets of paper that were like fill in the blanks, and you'd quickly fill them in. Then you'd call the call center or whoever you got had them online, and you would now relay the message. And it was in a standard format, that, and so they would know, and you would get that to them, and boom, that when they would blast that out, that was instantaneous back then, just like it is today. It would immediately get to the Department of Defense, everybody in the chain of command, Washington, Secretary of State if necessary, Secretary of Defense, President, Vice President. They would all be – their people would have a time limit on which they would have to tell them. So, for example, on 9/11 in 2001, you'll recall that somebody came in and interrupted President Bush when the first airplane flew into one of the towers in New York City. The people that worked for the president had a time limit. They had whatever it was. I don't know. And this is what I asked one of my friends who's a retired ambassador, and he's been on the show, Stanley Escudero, Ambassador Escudero. I just saw him about a week ago. He said, I'm assuming that you would have protocols in the State Department as well for time limits on when, you know. And he said, yes, you would have to immediately send out an initial message saying the ambassador has been taken and the consulate overrun. And then you would have follow-up messages that you would have to send out an update, which is precisely what the consulate did, which means that Washington knew that the administration and everybody in the administration knew literally within 5 minutes. Well, you know, their people have 10, 15 minutes to notify, say, the president, the vice president, secretary of defense, secretary of state, whatever their protocols are. So we'll give them some leeway. We'll say that within 30 minutes, they all knew precisely what had happened. Now, when I say precisely, what would they know from the initial message? Well, that's what we'd like to see is the initial message. What did the initial message say? It surely would have said something to the effect, the ambassador is missing or has been kidnapped or taken, and the consulate has been overrun, and we are fighting. There you have it. So now let's focus our efforts on our ambassador to the United Nations, Miss Rice. Yeah, everybody keeps going, oh, you can't pick on her. Oh, she didn't know. Oh, she did. Let's think of it logically, okay? If you put a person out there to talk for you and talk to the media about what was going on, and then that person spent all day saying the wrong thing, well, then you'd have to correct it. Nothing was ever corrected. Now they're saying, well, she had the unclassified version. Well, let's see what the unclassified version was and whether she went off script. Because the CIA is now telling us precisely what the unclassified version of the occurrences were. And here they are. The currently available information suggests that the demonstrations in Benghazi were spontaneously inspired by the protests at the United States Embassy in Cairo. Now, see, they knew that was not true. They were watching in real time what was occurring. There were no demonstrations. So that's lie number one that the administration put out, even in the unclassified version. But these are the talking points, so you can't fault Ms. Rice, Ambassador Rice, for just regurgitating the talking points. What you can fault is her boss and her bosses for allowing her to use talking points that were false. In any case, the currently available information suggests that the demonstrations in Benghazi were spontaneously inspired by the protests at the United States Embassy in Cairo and devolved into a direct assault against United States diplomatic post in Benghazi. And I have to interject here. I don't think that was a diplomatic post. That was a negotiating post where we were cutting deals with Al-Qaeda. Cutting deals with Al-Qaeda to swap weapons, to get weapons to supposedly the rebels in Syria, I'm telling you right now, to get weapons to Al-Qaeda in Syria. Yeah, we were working with Al-Qaeda. Remember, this administration told us that Al-Qaeda had been decimated. In fact, this ambassador is going to tell us that Al-Qaeda has been decimated. But we were working with them. How do you work with a decimated outfit? Anyway, there are indications that extremists participated in the violent demonstrations. Now, they knew. General Petraeus testified this morning. They knew that this was a coordinated attack by Al-Qaeda operatives. These weren't extremists. They were Al-Qaeda operatives. Okay, what else do we know? The assessment may change. Now, so here's kind of the out. This is the get-out-of-jail-free pass. The assessment may change as additional information is collected and analyzed. Finally, the investigation is ongoing in the United States, is working with blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay. Well, let's see what she had to say when, for example, she was on NBC's Meet the Press. David Gregory was talking with her, and she says, "Well, David, we can't predict with any certainty, but let's remember what has transpired over the last several days. This is a response to a hateful and offensive video." Now, I just read to you what the unclassified talking points were, okay? Spontaneously inspired protests that extremists participated in. Now, let's see how she's going to word it. This is a response to a video that was widely disseminated throughout the Arab and Muslim world. Yeah, pretty much by this administration, they disseminated. Their world didn't know what it was or where it was until they had to talk about it and apologize for it. Obviously, our view is that there is absolutely no excuse for violence, and that was what happened in is condemnable. But this is a spontaneous reaction to a video. And it's not dissimilar, but perhaps on a slightly larger scale, than what we have seen in the past with the satanic verses and cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Okay, that's what it is. I don't think she really stuck to the unclassified talking points there. I think she started to diverge, but let's see what she then later on told Candy Crowley on CNN. Kind of the same talking points, but she now starts to go more off script. Well, Candy, first of all, let's recall what has happened the last several days. This was a hateful video. Yeah. Had nothing to do with the United States government, and it's one that we find disgusting and reprehensible. It's been offensive to many, many people around the world. That sparked violence in various parts of the world, including violence directed at Western facilities, including our embassies and consulates. The violence was absolutely unacceptable. It's not a response that one can ever condone when it comes to such a video. And when working closely and indeed effectively, yeah, right, now we know that's not true, with the governments in the region. And frankly, we've seen these sorts of incidents in the past. And then she regurgitates satanic verses. So this is something we've seen in the past, and we expect that it's possible that these kinds of things could percolate in the future. What we're focused on is securing personnel. Yeah, you should have done that first. So no mention now of extremists, terrorists, coordinated attack, and certainly not the word Al-Qaeda. Further down, Rice characterizes Benghazi as that horrific incident where some mob was hijacked by a handful of extremists. There was no mob that was hijacked by extremists. It was an attack on a U.S. facility, whatever kind of facility it really was, that was planned and coordinated with different Al-Qaeda militias there. And here's something interesting. You've heard that it was the local police that was guarding the consulate. You know, normally that's how it works. The police or military in the host country is responsible for security. There are no official police in Benghazi because there are so many Al-Qaeda militias there. There's no police. So the reality is it was members of one of the militias. So we were guarding one of our embassies with Al-Qaeda militia operatives. That's how cozy we've gotten with Al-Qaeda because, well, no, according to this administration, they're decimated. They're all gone, except they're all over the place now. All right, well, let's take a look at the next article. That was out of Human Events. Daily Caller makes a really good point about the uses of history and how history gets rewritten. And this article was written by David Landau, San Francisco editor, who used to be a foreign policy expert, but gladly gave that up to be a novelist and a playwright, but he just couldn't resist on this one. He tells a story of a friend of his a woman that he was astonished when he mentioned something about the Soviet Union, and this is to highlight what has just taken place with some comments Susan Wright made back in 2008. So this just goes to show how incredible and uncredible she is as an ambassador. There's no way in hell she should be taken over as Secretary of State. So something came up about the Cold War, and the woman he will refer to as Paula said, oh, there was nothing to that. And he was quite astonished. He said, but I lived through it. Oh, it never happened. He said, have you heard of the Soviet Union? Now, when I got to back up. What never happened? The Cold War. Okay. Sure I have, but it was a sham. Who told you that? I can tell from the way the Soviets folded. They actually had no power at all. The Cold War was just a lot of right-wing politicking and warmongering. With a lot of nuclear weapons, yeah. Paula noted my discomfort in a kindly way she had. It's true, I heard it from a Washington insider. Oh, well, that makes me feel better. I was not in doubt about the matter, but in our talk, I had been distressed to see that knowledge itself is relative. Paula's version of the Cold War was not something she thought or believed. It was something she knew. And, of course, she was completely wrong. So he then says, let's take a look at Susan Rice, who was a foreign policy advisor. Remember, she's nobody, doesn't know anything about foreign policy. Oh, yeah, you got to leave her alone. But yet she advised Obama on foreign policy back in 2008 when he was running for president. So apparently he thought she knew something about foreign policy. Now today it's like, oh, she doesn't know anything. She's not connected to foreign policy in any way other than being an ambassador to the UN. She was asked to defend Obama's statement that as president he would be willing to meet free of preconditions with leaders of nations that were hostile to the U.S. Now let's zap back in time. Didn't we have a president that did that and it didn't turn out so good? John F. Kennedy went to Vienna in 1961 and got mopped up by the Soviet premier, Nikita Khrushchev. It really weakened him for a little bit. And if he had failed during the Cuban Missile Crisis, that would have been it. I mean, we would have been in serious trouble. He was inexperienced, naive, like Obama is now. Now Obama's just playing stupid now because he shouldn't be naive on anything anymore. Anyway, he met with Khrushchev. And Rice asserted in this 2008 interview that the Kennedy-Khrushchev sessions were actually constructive because the personal relationship established by the two leaders allowed them the following year to resolve the Cuban Missile Crisis. There was no personal relationship. It's like saying there's a personal relationship between the Hatfield and McCoys. Like my friend Paula, Ms. Rice delivered her assertion emphatically with all the confidence in the world, and it counted for nothing that Ms. Rice had been brazenly inaccurate. At Vienna, Khrushchev wiped the floor with Kennedy, and the effect was to increase the bellicosity of both men. The meeting let loose violent impulses that raised the Berlin Wall, deepened the Vietnam War, and put Soviet nuclear missiles in Cuba. So now we see the kind of people we're dealing with. Rewrite history, naive, lie. And there's a cover-up going on. This really is what's going on in Benghazi. There's a cover-up going on. We were dealing – now, was it illegal? You know, the Iran-Contra incident under President Reagan, there were illegalities that were going on. We were transferring weapons through South America to get them to Iran as they were fighting Iraq at the time, I guess. And or they were funneling stuff to the Afghans to fight the Soviet Union. I don't even remember now, but you remember the Iran-Contra scandal. In any case, this may not be the same thing of us funneling U.S. weapons to Syria. That would be criminal. That would be a violation of law because this administration in engaging in that with diplomats to affect that without Congress's knowledge or approval would be criminal. What they most likely were doing was working with Al-Qaeda and other groups, sort of as middlemen, to help organize the collection of weapons that could be shipped to the, quote, rebels in Syria, or rather the Al-Qaeda operatives in Syria. So we were working with numerous Al-Qaeda groups and offshoots to assist Al-Qaeda in Syria. That's really what was going on. That's the cover-up. Now, is that criminal? No. It certainly is impeachable because of the lies that have been told. Does that mean a president would be removed from office for that? No, unless we find some criminal activity. The lie in itself is not considered a crime serious enough to remove. But remember, Bill Clinton simply lying about having sex with Monica Lewinsky, he got impeached. Not removed, just impeached. So it was all, kind of for show. Is that where we're at? Well, we need to find out. I don't think there's any reason to go through impeachment proceedings if nothing criminal was done. But we need to find out. I believe there was criminal activity that was engaged in. I believe there is. This is not the kind of thing that happens overseas in that situation that has to be lied about and covered up and really, honestly, let people die. We let people die to cover what was going on. Now, that would be hard to prove in terms of criminality, but it would be very clear. So that's why this needs to be delved into and dug into so that we can determine what really happened. And I know a lot of people out there might say, well, Tom, let's just move on past this. Well, first of all, if we had a Republican president right now, we wouldn't be moving on past this. This would have been all over the news before the election, still in the news, and the press would be relentless with it. But we know the press sides with liberal socialistic theology, if you will, and so they're going to do what they can to help and help cover up and not cover and ignore and on and on. Although more press is getting involved. I mean, the Petraeus affair kind of highlighted some things about national security, and his testimony today is giving us some insight. Although I don't believe his testimony, a transcript has been released, we do have some description from some of the folks that were there giving us some of the unclassified details. But somebody was on or asking the other day on one of the shows about a congressman they met with who said when he met with Petraeus, Petraeus said, do you want the official story or the unofficial story about what happened in Benghazi? So there were two stories. What Ambassador Rice was doing was giving the so-called official story, which was to lie and cover up when they knew exactly what happened. Is there a reason, a national security reason, for telling the American people that it was spontaneous because we don't want anybody to know that Al-Qaeda was involved? I mean, what? Oh, we're trying to track down Al-Qaeda. No. If after 9/11, 2001, did we hold back and say, oh, we better not let the American people know that Al-Qaeda was involved? As soon as we knew, which is pretty quick, the world knew Al-Qaeda and we're coming for you. In this case, it was, oh, we don't want anybody to know that it was Al-Qaeda. Why? My belief, firm belief is because we were working Al-Qaeda in Libya. You know, one of the things that Muammar Gaddafi did very well was he kept Al-Qaeda out of Libya, or at least hampered significantly their operations, because he knew they were a threat to him, just like they're a threat to Bashar Assad in Syria. So he went after Al-Qaeda with a vengeance. So there really was very little operation of Al-Qaeda in Libya, which means for us and our national security, they didn't have another outpost to develop and work out of and a safe haven there. It wasn't safe for them because Gaddafi did everything he could to destroy them within his own country. They were not welcome there. Now they're welcome with open arms, just like in Syria. So if we're able to topple the Assad regime in Syria, you're going to have a strong presence of Al-Qaeda in Syria. Just like we have, obviously, a very strong presence of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Now, what was it that one of the Iraq ministers, let me see if I've got it here. I'm pretty sure I do. Oh, from American Thinker today. With friends like these. Let's see. It came from Reuters. I don't have a name for an author. The Iraqi representative to the Arab League has called for using oil as a weapon to get the U.S. to stop backing Israel in their current war against Hamas. And here it is from Reuters. Iraq's representative said on Friday that Arab states should use oil as a weapon to put pressure on the United States and Israel over attacks on Gaza. Now, wait a minute. Okay, Israel can stop attacking Gaza, but they're having hundreds of rockets launched into Israel every day. What do they do? Go like, oh, yeah, we need our oil more than we need our lives, so we'll just let them shoot rockets at us and kill us, and we'll just let it go because we got to put gasoline on our cars. That's the stupidest thing. Anyway, Iraq will invite Arab ministers to use the weapon of oil with the aim of asserting real pressure on the United States and whoever stands with Israel. The economic weapon is the strongest one to be put in effect now. To assure of standing by the Palestinian people in light of there being no military power that can stand in the face of Israel at the present time. Well, then stop shooting rockets into Israel, you dumbasses. Goodness gracious. So remember the last time we had an oil embargo by our Arab friends? That was 1973. It caused a recession, led to stagnation as oil price shocks worked their way through the Western economies. That is not likely to happen this time because of an increase of our own supplies. We get a lot more from Canada and Mexico, but it would hurt the price. It would go up dramatically. As an airline pilot, I know that you're going to see airline tickets soar because we burn fuel that's based on oil that comes from petroleum. But the Arabs are serious about stopping the sale of oil to Israel supporters. They can still disrupt supplies and cause a speculation bubble that would raise prices substantially. That's what I just said. So who's coming up with this great idea? Iraq. The people that we had thousands of soldiers die to free and turn into a so-called democracy. Now, see, I was all against that. I'm all for going in and blowing the holy hell out of bad guys. And then you leave. To paraphrase George Patton, we win wars by killing people. Let me back up a second, because I used to give a speech when I was still in the military that talked about what we do in the military. There's one thing we do in the military. We win wars. All of our training, all of our prep, everything we do, everybody's job, whether they're a postal clerk, they drive a ship around, they work on a ship, they actually go and fight with a gun and bayonets. We carry bayonets still. Everything is oriented toward winning wars. When we're called, and we hope we never are, but when we're called, we have to go fight and win the war. And now to get to General Patton, how we win wars. We win wars by killing people. And the more we kill, the quicker we win. It's that simple. It's simple math. We've seen the wars of attrition, like Vietnam, Iraq, even Afghanistan to some degree. And then you throw nation building in on top of that. We lose thousands and thousands of our own soldiers, and we end up with a country, Iraq, that I've always predicted within 5 years will go from this somewhat secular so-called democracy to a Sharia law, hard left Islamic state. It'll go there. Don't worry. It's a matter of time. Afghanistan also. Egypt, look, it instantly turned into that with the Muslim Brotherhood. Syria, it'll be the same way. So where we had dictators, brutal dictators, that clamped down on all of this Sharia law and extremism within Islam, they're all falling and toppling as people want freedom, the freedom to be slaves under Sharia law, and that's really what's going on. And so it's naive of this administration to believe that all the Arab world is now. Well, I just say to kill our ambassadors and kill our people wherever they are. You know, I asked this question in the beginning of people that were sort of in the know. I said, why do we even have an embassy in Libya? It's so unstable. That government is so unstable, and there's such an al-Qaeda presence there now. We can certainly fly in and meet and have diplomats meet with people there, but why do we have a permanent presence? And in Tripoli. I'm talking about Tripoli. I had no idea there was some outpost in Benghazi. And then we have the Canadian, maybe it was the British ambassador. Yeah, British ambassador, who's attacked. And the Brits pull out. So we're the only flag flying in Benghazi that is of a nation. In fact, Libya doesn't have a flag flying in Benghazi. It's all Al-Qaeda flags that you see flying around there, except for our one flag. So we're surrounded by the enemy, and there we are. This is an absolute foreign policy failure, a national security failure, security of our diplomats failure. And when the president and the secretary of state say that, well, the buck stops with me. Well, it's one thing to be responsible. It's another thing to be accountable. How are you held accountable? You just go about your business, run for election again, win another election? I mean, how are you being held accountable? You're not being held accountable at all. If you are responsible for this massive failure, and don't tell me, oh, well, I didn't know. I had no way of knowing. That's too bad. You know, in the military, when a commander says, gee, I didn't know. Well, it was your job to know. You're fired. That's the answer. That's always the answer. What has this president done with generals and admirals who said, oh, gee, I didn't know. Well, that's your job. You're fired. But somehow with him, hi, I didn't know. You can't blame me. I'm just the president. What do I know? So as others have said, it's either pure incompetence or pure corruption. There's nothing really in between. Well, it could be a combination of corruption and incompetence. You know, you watch the show with the stupid criminals trying to break into a police station of no, you know, they do really stupid things. Yeah, maybe that's what we've got here. We've got people that are intent on breaking the law or not following their oaths, and yet they're not competent enough to get away with it. And that's why we need to look into this. This was a massive failure of national security. I mean, I want to know, how deep does this go? What other failures are about to hit us? What other things do the American people not know about that our so-called leadership in this administration and the State Department and the Defense Department know about that's about to whack us over the head next week or the week after or next month or tomorrow? That after the fact we'll say, well, how the hell did this happen? And then our so-called leaders go like, gee, we had no idea. We didn't know that. We didn't get those memos. That's always their excuse. So it's time to put a foot down, investigate this, and say, we want answers, and we're going to get them. And I think we need to push forward to this. Do I think there's going to be some kind of impeachment of this? No. I don't. We don't need to spend the money on that kind of stuff. That's not where I'm going with this. Where I'm going with this is we need answers so that we know. See, this is one of the things that you learn in aviation. When you have a problem, when you have a mishap, whether it's small or large, you have to learn from it. Now, learning from it means not just how could we prevent that exact thing from happening. You have to look for the underlying cause, because there may be a whole lot more rot under there. You will have all kinds of other types of accidents that would seem unrelated because you never found the underlying cause. And I think there's an underlying cause here. That underlying cause is a rotten State Department that has bad policies that are covering all kinds of other situations that we could potentially see other serious failures come to light. And we need to stop that before it happens. That's called being proactive. We have a reactive administration. It's time to be proactive. So I know Michael usually goes for a full hour, and I'm not going to go for a full hour today. I want to enjoy the rest of the evening. I got to get up early tomorrow and go flying. But I really appreciate Michael Cutler letting me fill in for him on his show tonight. And wherever he is, and I apologize for not writing that down. But remember, you can find Michael on his website, sites, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com. And, of course, go check out that article about Chuckie Schmuck Schumer at capsweb.org. All right, and my show is The American Hour. You can find it. It's quite easy. Just really type my name in to Google. It'll probably get you to my Facebook page, but you can type in TomGarcia.com. TomGarcia.com will take you to my webpage, my page on the USA Radio Network. And we're taking a little break from broadcasting here for maybe about a month. We were hot and heavy there with the election coming up and everything else. Taking a little break, but we'll be back, and we're going to start a series on the Constitution. There are too many things that people don't know about the Constitution, that if people were more enlightened, they'd have a better understanding of how our government's supposed to work and then what they should be demanding out of their government. So don't miss that. Go to TomGarcia.com. And thanks for being with us tonight. We will see you sometime in the future on my show, or Michael will be back next Friday night, same time, 7 p.m. Take care. Be safe out there.